lost everything until that dog arrived on my doorstep. A final gift for my wife. In that moment, I received some semblance of hope. An opportunity to grieve on alone. And your son took that from me.
Stole that from me. Killed that from me! People keep asking if I'm back, and I haven't really had an answer. But now, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
Welcome to the 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast. Look at the entire John Wick franchise.
Bonjour, Monsieur Wick, and welcome to La Resistance.
Join Garrett.
Well, your little act of uncivil disobedience inspired me, John. I'm branching out, spreading my wings.
Matt.
You working again?
No, just sorting some stuff out.
And Adam.
This life follows you.
As they earn their coins by reviewing each film of the Keanu Reeves starring franchise, leading up to a review of Ballerina, released by Lionsgate Films earlier this year.
30 paces. In the event that both parties survive, each will approach the other at increments of 10 paces until only one remains.
So unholster your ears in these confines, Percolated Media listeners.
I'm not asking you to kill anyone.
The Percolated Media John Wick Retrospective begins now.
If you would be so kind as to follow me.
John Wick, Chapter 4, released March 24th, 2023. Budget on this was $100 million, box office $447.3 million. Last one my ass. And this is directed by Chad Stahelski. All right, well, Chapter 3 comes around, does big business. Every single time one of these comes out, we hear Stahelski and Reeves both say, this takes it all out of us, we're done, no more. Then the box office receipts come in, and then they're like, yeah, we're game for one more. Matt, how excited were you for John Wick Chapter 4?
To the point where if I was the roadrunner, I would have gotten to a theater as quickly as I possibly could. These have gotten better with every installment, and I appreciate that they've gotten bigger and better, literally both. And you couldn't convince me any more than just... I mean, this movie could just be Keanu Reeves shooting people for 3 hours, and I would have probably been content. But you brought some pretty heavy hitters as far as names that I enjoy to further sell. So I was Fry going, shut up and take my money.
All right. Well, Adam, were you as excited for Chapter 4?
If I could have been in line a week before just to be the first person in the doors, I would have. Yeah, this is something, you know, I wasn't as excited on 3 as anybody else, but...
Can't all be right all the time.
But I thought the marketing for this was exciting. I couldn't wait to see him back. And they hinted without... saying so that this might be the last one. Everything that I had saw in the lead up to this between the cast and as soon as the marketing hit, I was like, oh shit, they're gonna plus it once again. That it's not something I thought they could have done. So yeah, this was opening night, Dolby seats, powered recliner, icy large popcorn, refilled before it started. I was fucking hyped.
Well, I was hyped for it too, and I was going to go opening weekend. I was going to go to see it in theaters at all, and then, well, I had something called a heart procedure the week that this was out. So I was not able to go opening weekend. By the time I had recovered, I just didn't even think about it. And I waited for streaming for it to actually see it. Me and Jen watched it one night when we were home. And that was my last time watching it. I was excited, but I was not able to see it in theater. And after I was done with watching it at home, I was like, God damn it, why didn't I see this in theaters? Adam, you saw this opening weekend. Did you take the wife or was this a solo effort?
This was just a me.
All right, well, this had different writers. We do not have Derek Kolstad for the first time writing one of these. Matt, did that deter you at all? Did you feel like, well, if we don't have the original writer, maybe it won't be as good?
No, because I've seen half of the directing duo from the first one leave, and to me that's more important than the writing with these movies in particular because they're so minimal on dialogue. I mean, this movie, Keanu, has probably 30 lines. It's one line every 10 minutes of screen time.
Well, and that was his choice. I mean, he's the one who got the script, and he had many, many more lines, but he's like, nope, I'm not going to say that. Even he realizes his limitations as an actor. All right. Well, I want to go ahead and just jump right in, boys. We open up in New York City as something is getting punched, and we're hearing the Bowery King's voice in the background saying, "You are now in the presence of a motherfucking king." This is like Captain America in the first Avengers film. I'm looking at this. I'm like, oh, God. And every time this thing gets hit with my surround system, I'm like, fuck, that's loud.
I half expected him to walk out to a boxing ring after this.
Yes.
I especially also like the motif of the sunrise, which echoes the end of the movie.
No. Suddenly, I'm like, what the fuck are we doing?
Really?
to start with, Lawrence Fishburne just, I mean, he might as well be put on a butcher's coat as much as he's hamming it up here at the motherfucking John Wick. I mean, he is he Polly Dangerously fucking coming out here to the ring? It doesn't fit anything we've seen in the other three movies. This is a weird choice. I can't wait for the lights to go down and this starts, and I'm just like, I don't know what we're doing.
I don't think he's hamming it up nearly as much as he did in the second one.
To start with this, though,
yeah.
I mean, this is he introduces the movie.
That was an interesting choice to go with Fishburne to be your first voice you hear. So the king asks John if he's ready, and John says, yeah. Which seems to be Keanu Reeves.
Big shot.
Yeah.
That is, yeah, is his new woe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Good one, Adam. We cut to John being pursued by horseback in the Arabian desert as we see that he's being watched. He goes and tries to get his ring, quote-unquote, freedom back. Wick is told that his ring is gone like the elder before him and that he's come a long way for nothing. Man, I thought for sure he'd get this ring back, but I guess this movie is really about leaving the past behind.
Oh, this is about him burying everything about himself. Like stripping him down to his inner being. But I also appreciate, I thought they would have lazily forgotten that he chopped his finger off. But nope, they kept that continuity because if they forgot that, I would have been bitching about it nonstop.
Not to mention, this pretty much carries on the tradition of these films, right? We're solving the end of the previous film in the first piece of film.
If I thought I was worried at the intro, I'm starting to slink down in my seat.
Uh-oh.
We already went to the desert. I don't know how we are literally rehashing what we did. I mean, this is the image that he said he wanted in the third one of John Wick in his suit on horseback shooting people down. And now we get a different elder. And suddenly the table matters, but the table didn't matter. And the elder was above the table, but now the table still has say over what the elder did. You literally just took your mythology and fucking threw it in a blender, and you don't know what matters anymore. This part, I can't stand it.
Wow.
Because it completely contradicts what he did in the last one with them, and I got big problems with this. I feel like this screenwriter did not watch the other three movies.
Wick doesn't take any shit, though, and he just shoots this guy down. We cut to the Harbinger. He shows up to see the manager. Now the Harbinger is played by Clancy Brown. We'll get to him when we get to Shawshank and Pet Sematary 2. Matt, they just keep adding characters here, don't they?
Yeah, and they keep adding people with great voices. Like, that's the real trend of this. This series, because, you know, this is Mr. Krabs and Lex Luthor to me. So look, if there was someone I would want as my emissary to speak my will into existence, I probably would pick Clancy Brown.
Kurgan himself. What a get. Fucking love it. And just his introduction that he, you know, slides something. It's just, you know, we get Lance Reddick in his final role. I mean, he's done some stuff, but his last, what a lot of people say is his final role, but just that there's a, he does the introduction. There's a harbinger here. We know what that word means, and it's not good.
So Harbinger tells Winston that he has 1 hour before leaving. Winston tells Sharon that they are now the judge and jury, as they now need to evacuate the hotel. Winston tells Sharon that he has the unshakable faith of David. Winston then visits the Marquis, played by Bill Skarsgård. Now, we've talked about these Skarsgårds a lot this year. This Marquis, interesting character. I can't really get a read on him, although I like how Bill Skarsgård plays him.
I finally feel like we have an actual, like, detestable villain. Maybe that's just because he's ultra rich and he's French. Yeah. That adds to your dislike of him. Because he's like that textbook, like, European yuppie who's born into wealth and doesn't have to work hard. But I also like that you cast a guy that, if he needed to fight, not that he does in this movie, which I appreciate, you wouldn't be surprised because he towers over everybody. He's like, what, 6'4"?
Mm-hmm.
He's also a great actor, which is the weirdest thing because Stellan's a good actor, but I don't think he has the range Bill does. You almost wouldn't believe him and Pennywise are the same guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the take I had. I was watching him. I'm like, God damn, this is the same guy who played Pennywise.
And he's sort of now like in the Gary Oldman phase of I'm just playing villains because I'm good at it. I feel bad for him because he had to be the guy who said yes to the Crow remake.
Oh, yeah.
But also Nosferatu. Like, these are three very different characters that he's played.
All right, Adam. Well, you didn't have much fun with the first two scenes of this. How are you feeling about our introduction to the Marquee here?
Oh,
boy.
This is a weird choice. So the table's hiring somebody to go kill John Wick. Okay. Like, they put a bounty on him. But then they're hiring somebody to go kill John Wick by putting a bounty on him. So I just don't understand, other than you just have to have an antagonist. I don't care very much for the way he plays it. I don't care very much for the opulence. I get what they're going for, but I just don't care for it. He may be the best actor in the Skarsgård family, but he's also the one that I like watching the least, if that makes sense. I don't know. This is a weird get. And I understand that they deliberately don't give him a lot of backstory, which is amazing in a 3-hour film. The Marquis is kind of a lowly, almost fake title in France. It's kind of just given out and it's almost a joke. So I like that. You know, it's almost like fake gold. But when I break it down and I'm like, okay, all you do is hire somebody to go hire people to kill Wick when you already have a bounty on Wick. So I just don't get his need other than to have somebody in that role.
I think it's the high table just sweating bullets, literally, that, okay, we got to go, like, all expenses paid. But I'm also confused, like, is he part of the high table or not?
Right.
Yeah, that's the confusion I had, too.
Because I thought he was one of the members, but he doesn't technically rule over anything, which I also, you can read into, because Marquis, to your point, Adam, it's a title that you could almost buy.
Yep.
If you were wealthy enough in Europe. So maybe he literally bought a seat. Like, he's what Santino wanted to be.
Mm-hmm. And I think that would have been, well, I'll save that for towards the end of it, where I think five is going to go.
We're seeing San falling, and the Marquis tells Winston that second chances are the refuge of men who fail. He then says that there are those at the table who blame Winston for the atrocities in New York. And Winston replies that, hey, I shot him. I tried. Sharon says the Continental is a reminder that none of them are beyond the rules. And Marquis replies that all of them are there because of John Wick as the sand continues to fall. Marquis tells them they are no longer New York. They are excommunicado as he pulls out a gun and shoots Sharon, saying his services as concierge will no longer be needed. Boy, I wish I could handle rule-breaking employees like this. He just pulls out a gun and shoots them.
I also think this is a bad editing choice. This should have been the cold open to the movie.
I agree. Definitely. Because
This took me completely by surprise.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I did not expect them to kill him. I mean, yeah, we knew that. Look, there's going to be a title card at the end here that dedicates this to Lance Reddick. We knew this was one of his last roles, but I thought he would last the entire film. I did not expect this to happen.
It gets you with a shock. I think it's a good choice to have this kind of consequence early on. I do think a cold open for this entire opening part would have been pretty awesome, but it's kind of devastating. And when this movie came out, he had just passed away. Like, wasn't he doing press for this movie and then like passed while they were doing overseas press for it? So this, I mean, fuck, but I like watching the Continental then in the background freaking blow up. It's just like, oh shit.
We cut to Kane, a high table assassin sent to kill John. He tells Kane that he put his daughter in danger, and here we're seeing a unique way to translate Braille to screen. I did like this, but how many times is Donnie going to play a fucking blind person in an American film?
Well, it took him this time to finally get it right.
So I don't know about that.
I think he is a welcome addition to this. And again, I feel like when him and John Wick actually fight, I finally feel like it's an equal playing field.
Kane accepts the assignment, saying that he has few friends left and even fewer that he trusts. So we cut to, all right, so this guy's, we're going to know him as a tracker. He's walking his dog as assassins pursue, and then he gets a room at the Osaka Continental. I love this whole thing about emotional support animals, because I have this conversation almost every day at my own job, but I think this Mr. Nobody character, I think this is a dig at David Leitch's other film, which was Mr. Nobody, which was the film with Bob Odenkirk. And I think if anybody in this movie, this is a character you could cut. I think he's only here just because he has a dog. Like, there's no real purpose of him in this movie.
Well, I like that we have continuing the trend of a bounty hunter, and with the added addition of I'm waiting for the price to match what I want before I go after him, and nobody kills him but me. I mean, that this one has a lot of, we've talked about how these movies are influenced by a lot of other movies. This is very like Western, and I mean spaghetti Western-esque, of Law and Order, like the rules of bounty hunting. But Donnie Yen is very much the, like the Jackie Chan influence, because we see him use stuff at his disposal to fight. You know, that's very like Drunken Master type. And of course, the choreography in some of these fights are very Shaw Brothers-esque. So this one's really, they should have called it John Wick 4. Well, they got rid of the subtitle. They only did that for the third one. I don't know why they went back to just Chapter 4. Because they should have called this John Wick Chapter 4 Excess. Because we're throwing everything into this. Because I fully believe when they set out to make this, it was the last one. Not just because of how it ends.
I do too. And I think it's a horse race between Westerns and video games as to what had more influence on the making of this film.
I don't understand why he's here. I get why the movie tells me he's here. I don't understand why I need him here. I think this movie, to Matt's point, I think this movie is designed to be a final chapter. I also think this movie is designed to set up a future Wickverse, which is crazy, being that the spinoff that we get is not really something from this film. But I think this thing sets up like three different spinoffs, and that's not what we get. And then I think Mr. Nobody is, this tracker is designed to be one of them. By the end of the film, I don't not like him. But for the first, and at this point, we're almost, 30 minutes into it. I don't need him here. And I don't like that he's just kind of shoved in here with no explanation other than, hey, we're a dog. Well, you know what? I don't like him because he fucking, he trained his dog's ears up. And if you're going to get a dog, and if you're going to frickin', if you're going to force their ears, crimp their ears, you're a bad guy in my mind.
So Mazu is told that he has a dinner with his daughter planned, and he tells Akira that maybe she needs an emotional support animal herself. He then tells her to tell his daughter that he looks forward to their dinner. He tells his guards not to let anyone win as he walks to John and asks to find peace. He tells Wick that killing the elder was a mistake and that his daughter fears that they are next. He then asks Wick that if he's given any thought to when this ends, as the table will never stop until they take his life. Wick apologizes, and he's then told that friendship means little when it's convenient. So we see Mr. Nobody, he's thumbing through a book as some guys show up looking for the manager, and Akira asks that the Continental be evacuated. Shimazu tells Akira to stay with Wick as he'll handle the guests. They gear up, and they ask for the hotel's full services as they speak for the Marquis. This is when Kane enters and tells Shimazu hello. They ask about each other's daughters, and Kane tells Shimazu that no one defies the table.
Also, they're just adding, like, getting fucking Hiroyuki Sanada to show up in this.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We see the lights go out and arrows being drawn and the fight is on. I do like the fact that instead of guns, they have arrows. That was a nice touch. It gives a different flavor to this. And this fight, by the way, is 35 minutes. It is a hell of a...
What's also impressive, this movie allows for people other than John Wick to do some of the heavy lifting.
You got one of my points that I was going to bring up a little bit later, but this one, I think once we get here to Osaka, I feel like this movie, it's almost like you could have put the title card there. You know, you had like 20 minutes of setup, but this is almost like, okay, movie start once we get here to Osaka and the Japan Continental. Sanada being here is such a great get. What a wonderful actor. Scorpion, for those that were unfortunately saw the last remake of Mortal Kombat, but you know where he goes back with Keanu, right? 47 Ronin.
Oh, God, that's right.
Yep. So I have a feel, it feels like this entire scene was something that they just wanted that to have the Western audiences kind of take, you know, what they never did back when he did that movie. Before we even get to this fight, the cinematography, the lighting, the color choices is fucking beautiful. When they are outside and he has his first, you know, conversation with John Wick and Keanu speaking in Japanese and just the colors, just nothing but black with red lights behind him. This thing is shot within a fucking inch of its life and it is gorgeous.
These movies have always had really good production values, but this one's almost like a whole new level.
Yep.
And I was very upset at the time that this didn't get any Oscar buzz for like the technicals, because the craftsmanship in this, the sound design of when they're fighting with swords later on, the cinematography. I mean, I don't know who the DP was on this, but I don't even know if it's the same one who did the previous installments, quite frankly. But man, this thing is a technical marvel, and it's one of the reasons why I support this franchise as much as I do. Is it's not just about the beautiful brutality of the fighting; it's the whole world is vibrant and lived in.
To your point, the sound design, the sound editing, the Foley work, because there's times, especially during the fight, where the score will drop out just to get the weapon sounds. And I don't think that's appreciated as much as it really needs to be, because it is such a part of what makes these movies as great as they are.
And yeah, the same. He's done only the sequels. He didn't do the first one. But now this makes a whole lot of sense. He's been Del Toro's cinematographer for ever since.
Yeah, he did Ship of Water, Crimson Peak.
Yeah, he hasn't done all of his movies, but he's done basically everything he's done for the last decade.
And Garland too, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And he's done some crap. He did Silent Hill. He did League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
At least those look like, cinematography-wise, they're beautiful films. They're just shit films.
Everybody's got to eat. I feel like Sonata was part of a divorce settlement because he's also in Bullet Train, which was David Leitch's movie.
We get a Big Trouble in Little China type fight as it is pure chaos as more reinforcements arrive, and they're told to secure the hotel and find Wick. Akira tells Wick that he shouldn't have come as they gear up for another fight, and I love how she has her fighting gear on under this outfit. She just strips off her clothes and there's her fighting outfit.
Akira show badass. Like that. And yeah. To me, that was the obvious spinoff they were trying to make. So it's weird that they went with ballerina, because this is obvious.
Yeah, especially with the fucking post-credit scene.
Well,
yep.
Yeah.
When these reinforcements show up here at the Osaka Continental, what I appreciated is if you watch last week's film, Parabellum, they come in the same way. And they look with armored up the same way, but just a Japanese style of that exact same armament. And that's such a cool little fine detail. You know, it's just like a Japanese version of those warriors. And, you know, they're bulletproof, but they sure as fuck aren't arrowproof.
There's some good stuff here as gun-fu is mixed with hand-to-hand combat. And I say this every week, but Keanu is no spring chicken. It is impressive that he's still going like this and keeping up the way he is. I love Keanu in this one.
Yeah, he's now 60.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I like the change as well. You know, it's not just the gun fu in this one. There's so many blades and the nunchucks that he pulls out and all the work with that. And if you watch the behind the scenes on how hard it was to choreograph nunchucks, it's fucking crazy. But this goes on so long, like it's almost a movie itself, but it is a dance and it's beautifully horrific. I can't overemphasize how much I love this scene. You know, I wasn't thrilled with the opening 15 minutes of this film. We get to Osaka and I have completely turned, and I'm in love with all of this.
We have the inclusion once again of sumo guys roaming around, and we see Kane at work taking these guys out even though he's blind and placing devices everywhere. We have this doorbell ring as a distraction, which I thought was awesome.
That's so cool.
Well, they also explain, like, okay, he's not a Jedi, and those things he put up are the sensor, like heat sensors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why those things at the grocery store are theirs.
Yeah.
Well, one of many reasons. A, to fuck up normal people trying to walk around, because those things move by their own fruition. And B, helps blind people know where things are and things like home intruders. So I like that there's thought into him actually fighting. And of course, you get a guy who is as believable as Keanu.
We see tumbling down an escalator as the fight with Akira and Wick teaming up continues. And once again, they are not shying from kicking a woman's ass in this, are they?
No.
No.
Also, she is not an actress. She is a pop singer.
Yeah, she's a singer. Mm-hmm.
Which also makes sense, though, because choreography, like music video choreography, is very much adaptable to filmmaking.
Definitely. And she has a song in the soundtrack, too.
She's got that, and it makes me think of Lady Snowblood, who does the credit song for that, the same actress. So it's just made me think that it's that kind of appreciation for someone that loves Asian cinema.
We see a fight up these lit-up stairs. Shimazu tells Wick to go to the Yamada station and not insult his gift to him. He then tells him to kill as many as he can. More fighting, this time through white lights, as Wick kills a guy while leaning against drums, which I thought was awesome. Wick is once again thrown through glass, and then he puts a set of nunchucks to good use, as Adam pointed out. And he's just out in the open here, right? I mean, he's not hiding and attacking. He's just fighting anything that comes at him. And I love this one,
he's like, I don't care. If you are in my... He might kill a Mater D thinking that they're an assassin.
I love this drop toll hole through glass that he does. It's a nice little move. After all this, Kane comes into the picture. He says they gave him his name, and Wick apologizes for that. And then the fight is once again on as Wick takes a gun from a thug's hand, and Kane says that he should have stayed out. Some gun and hand-to-hand combat ensues, and they stop again to gather themselves and talk shit as Wick tells Kane he took a deal, and it all had to do with family. Another struggle happens, and Kane asks if John is now dead, but Kane hears a click, so he goes after him one more time. Another gunshot is heard as Mr. Nobody comes into the picture and aims at both, and the price of Wick's head goes up to $20 million. Wick gets shot at in a garden of trees and takes a guy down, and here comes Mr. Nobody to tell John that he has made quite the mess. Wick says he doesn't know him and that it still isn't enough of a price, but it's getting there, and that John needs to take better care of himself. So we see the trail that Kane has left behind as Kane tells Shimazu and Akira to go somewhere far away from here. He tells Shimazu that he owes Wick nothing, and Shimazu replies the only debts they have lie in markers. They stand off and Shimazu is cut. Kane tells him to look at him and says that even a blind man knows that he has lost. He tells Shimazu to take care of his daughter, and Shimazu attacks again and is stabbed again. So Kane then tells Akira to live as Shimazu dies in her arms. He then tells her that he will be waiting for her as she leaves.
Oh, this is the most obvious setup for a spinoff I have ever seen.
Unbelievable, yeah.
But like, I love this fight.
This fight's great, but I mean that thing is so obvious. I have expected like Kevin Feige to show up.
I think this is the first time in this series where we get a one-on-one fight that's not John Wick. Like, this movie pauses to let these two have this sword fight. And
it does, and I think that's also, with this one in particular, this is going to sound like a criticism, but it's not. If anything, I think it's the contrary. John Wick has become the least interesting character in his own franchise.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't say that as a bad thing, because some of the people they add to this movie, I really appreciate.
That makes sense. Not disparagingly, but yeah.
We cut to Wick getting on the same train as Akira, who tells Wick that her father is dead because of what he did. Wick says he understands, and she tells him goodbye. We then cut to Winston and the Bowery King talking about Wick, and the king says last time he spoke to Wick, he shot him off a roof. He asks why he was spared, and Winston replies that they let him live to make him look like a coward and a turncoat. We then see the Marquis taking out each and every Continental to give Wick less options, and he says that the bloodshed was the point. Kane,
this is when it's another one where I'm like, I don't think they're understanding what they want to do between the high table and the elder. Remember, we got an elder who supposedly sits above the table and the Marquis. And I don't know, maybe this is them blowing up that Continental TV series that didn't turn out the way they wanted.
And well, also the elder is 6 feet under. So maybe the whole like hierarchy is fucked up now.
Well, Adam has a point, though. The mythology is getting jumbled at this point.
This is the problem when you keep expanding the world, and this thing is like a fucking quadruple layer cake of a hierarchy.
Yeah. Kane tells Mr. Nobody that Wick will make it his choice and to think twice before accepting. The Marquis says that coyness is a cowardly trait, and Mr. Nobody says that if he pays $25 million and a contribution to his 401k, that he won't find him without his help. The Marquis negotiates until they arrive at $23 million, until he takes a knife and puts it in his hand. Now this... ow, pain.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and I do, Adam, you criticize the Marquis, but I do like how Skarsgård plays this, where he's just like, okay, you slide it out or you take it out. He's testing how big of a coward he is. If you take it out, you're a coward. If you slide it out, you're a man. Like, this is freaking gruesome, but good stuff.
I agree with that. Like, this scene, I don't understand why Mr. Nobody's here. Like, I don't see the tracker going here voluntarily. So I feel like this is 2 minute scene missing, but this is one of those where I'm like, all right, I like what he's doing here, but usually he's just sitting with his fucking tea and not doing much. But yeah, this I like.
Well, they're treating him like a Bond villain. He doesn't do the dirty work.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Marquis tells Mr. Nobody happy hunting. We cut to Wick walking up some snow-covered stairs as Winston pays respect to the grave of Sharon, but boy, does this hit different now watching this.
Yeah, I mean, this is like stairs. When you watch, it's like when you watch speaking of The Crow, like it takes on a whole new meaning, or even like watching Furious 7, having that in the back of your mind.
These stairs and the way that they're framed with snow, did anybody else think of a stairway to heaven or stairway to hell?
No.
Because I feel like that's this, and then it's echoed again at the end.
Well, I was certainly thinking purgatory.
Mm-hmm. Wick gives Winston his condolences, and Winston says he was taken for their sins, and then he gives Wick the lowdown on the Marquis. Winston asks Wick if he's learned anything, as if Wick takes out the Marquis, they'll just send another one. He tells him to challenge the Marquis to single combat and to take away all his resources.
I should have yelled Mortal Kombat.
couldn't shout much through those giant fucking veneers that he has on. Oh my God. That's like the Family Guy episode where Brian gets fake teeth.
It's also win or lose, he'll have his freedom. So Wick says that he doesn't have a family, and Winston suggests he go to Berlin and mend it or pick a plot. Wick is once again tracked as he goes to Berlin to the headquarters of the Ruska Roma crime syndicate to sink readmission. And I love how he's unloading his weapons and the girl is complimenting him on his revolver. This is funny stuff.
Yeah, it's like looking at his piece.
Yeah, really. Exactly. Wick is shot and he is complimented on his suit. And Mr. Nobody tells the Marquis where Wick is. And the Marquis says that the deal was for his service and he'll get his prize only when the job's done.
Oh, I also love how the crime boss is named Klaus.
Yeah.
I am Klaus. I guess this guy's a famous bouncer in the area. And like all the piercings and tattoos are completely his. I'm going to say, I got an issue with this Ruska Roma. Because we did the family thing last week with Angelica Houston and all that. And that was his family. So now we're in, one, they say Berlin. But Ruska Roma is a Russian. Romani. Yeah, that's Romani in Russia. So if you're going to fuck up geography, I'm going to notice. And it just really, really bugs me. I think this is way too clumsy than it needs to be. It's, I don't know. To me, if you were going to do this, and it's what, I guess I'll say it now. It's what I think you should be setting up for the future. You set up this family against the Santino family since he killed two of them in John Wick 2. And if you literally get two high table families facing off, I think you change the universe.
We go back to Wick as he's pulled up on this crane and he's told that he has no business here as they're under the table. And Wick says that they can help each other with their common enemy. I thought common was a few films ago.
Wow.
Sorry.
Oh, he's coming back. Just wait.
They're keeping him in like cryo sleep or something.
Yeah. He says it'll all come together once he kills the Marquis in a duel, and this is when it makes sense to the Ruska Roma why he's here. She says Wick will only be welcomed into their family if he kills the man who killed her father.
Yeah, and that's his actual sister?
Yeah. Yeah, what is going on here? She sends Klaus to help Wick find a way in, and Wick is brought before the killer, Scott Atkins, as Wick is taken out of his restraints. So we have a side quest here. And this is so video game. This movie, more than any of them, especially, we're going to get a scene later on. Like it's all overhead shots of people being taken out. Matt, you got to say, this is more video gamey than any of them, isn't it?
Well, this is a side quest, but I wish I could replay this because this is my favorite part of the movie.
Mine too. I love this part.
I love Scott Atkins. Look, this is not an amazing performance. He's definitely, I mean, he is the Russian Kingpin mixed with Colin Farrell's Penguin.
I thought of Penguin a lot.
But he's having a lot of fun, and look, he does his own fighting too, which is equally impressive given all the prosthetics he's wearing.
I was about ready to say, it's not a good performance, but it's impressive to me because he's doing the fighting in this fat suit. And he
even it's a good performance, though, because you can't tell it's him. I mean, you know it's rubber, but like someone told me after that was Scott Atkins, and I'm like, oh, no way. Like, I didn't believe them.
One of my friends was telling me that it's impressive that they got someone as big as him to fight John Wick, and I was like, dude, that's Scott Atkins. That's a fat suit. He's like, that was a fat suit? You're right. It's unrecognizable.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not as good as Colin Farrell's Batman makeup, where you really can't tell, but it's a better fat suit than Brendan Fraser in The Whale. And so that card trick he does, he actually knows how to do that, and they put it in the movie. Which, okay, you don't play cards with somebody who knows how to do that, because it's obvious he's going to cheat.
Well, the weird part about this, how gangster is five-card draw? I mean, come on, this is not gangster. This is stuff you play when you're 12.
Especially when there's no chips.
Yes.
And you open face up. And clearly the deck is rigged because he has five of a kind, which is impossible in a standard deck because there's only four of every card.
Love that Kane calls that out.
Yeah.
He's like, let me guess, five of a kind.
Yeah.
All right. So I got to be there. Okay. So we don't ever really mention movies that we might discuss with one another. And when this movie came out, I don't think John Wick was on our vision board of something we were going to do. But Matt and I did text each other just to go, holy shit, Penguin Iceberg Lounge, right? Yes. Fucking awesome, right? Yes. This scene is fucking great. Like, what? Don't ask me why Mr. Nobody's here other than spinoff diversity casting. I love Kane showing up, and I love he's so just he doesn't want to be there. He's pissed. He's making jokes. You know, he's just, I love it. All this is so good. This is so fun. It's a very quick little break in the action before we get another long ass action scene. But oh my God, this is just this Penguin Iceberg Lounge scene, which is what I call it, is fucking 10 on 10.
I also think this is Adkins' jab at Steven Seagal because he does type of laugh constantly. I mean, it's Steven Seagal mixed with Christopher Lambert.
And the killer fights. You know, you ever get this big boss like this? They never fight. Nah, he goes toe-to-toe with Wick.
It's almost like that fat suit is designed to take you off guard.
Yeah.
Kane then arrives saying that he suspected Wick would be here and that his family sold him out. Tension is sensed and Kane blames Wick for the death of Koji. Mr. Nobody shows up and Klaus tells him to also take a seat.
How is the blind guy going to play cards? They don't have Braille inscriptions on them.
Yeah, I freak out at my casino every time someone in a wheelchair gets up and gets in a fucking chair at the card table. I could not imagine someone blind sitting down saying, yeah, deal me.
Your casino, they got a thumper. They're cheating.
You're not wrong. We have a circle jerk of everyone who wants to kill the other, and they have a genuine conundrum, which was a great delivery by Adkins. Killer suggests a hand of 5-card draw and suggests who will win what death. Shots of overhead fans. All these shots of overhead fans. Very Ridley Scott-esque.
Yeah, but it's also, I like that they're shaped like katanas.
Oh, yeah.
They should be playing, this should be one hand of blackjack.
Absolutely. 5-card draw. Wick has the dead man's hand as Kane puts down his hand of cards, as does Mr. Nobody, who has a royal flush.
But yeah, also, they all get ridiculously strong hands.
Ridiculous.
Like, this would bankrupt a casino with the amount of bad beats at this table.
Yes.
Yeah, we complain about this in Casino Royale, and this is just as ridiculous.
No, Casino Royale actually made it work because they never show a royal flush. But that last hand is ridiculous because you've got three, like a ace high flush, 2 boats, and a straight flush. I mean, that is a little absurd, but at least they were playing Hold'em.
I love this. I have one surefire gambler on here. I run a casino, and Matt plays this shit all the time. So we can have fights about these cards all damn day.
You want to play Raz? I'm going to be more in line with this.
Oh, if there was a craps table, he'd be all the way. He'd be at that place, no questions asked.
Killa reveals he has a 5-of-a-kind, which Kane predicts, as Matt mentioned, and Killa says it's nothing personal as a fight breaks out.
He also, this adds to the John Wick legend of pencils. He nearly slits his throat with a goddamn card.
Fucking gambits his ass.
He still fights him as he's bleeding out.
I like seeing everyone get involved in this action as Wick makes his way out through water colored by lights. And again, the obliviousness of all these people dancing as carnage goes on never fails to make me smile. Nobody's looking over as these guys are beating the shit out of one another. Killa is pissed that Wick shot him in the ass, and he starts dragging Wick across the floor, and then he punches him off the fountain, and Wick lands with a splat. But he took shots from Winston and landed on the pavement, so he's just fine.
At least he waits 30 seconds to get up.
That's true.
It's like Batman. It's enough to disorient him, but not enough to put him down for the count.
More fights amongst water happens as Wick gets his hand on an axe and Kane starts slicing people with his sword. We get more dog attacks as Mr. Nobody joins the action and Killa calls Wick unlucky. More fighting happens between these two as Wick grounds and pounds him down until Killa stops moving. This was pretty crazy. We've never seen Wick like this.
Mm-mm.
But the fights still aren't over as more guys attack and Killa tries to make a run for it. But he gets an axe to the back and he falls off the balcony just as he yells, "Why won't you just die?"
Well, also the sound design of his neck breaking.
Yes.
I squirmed in my seat. I'm like, whoever did the Foley work on that, bravo.
Exactly. And I like how Wick just pockets his gold teeth. Like he just reaches in.
Oh, yeah. It's his trophy.
Yeah.
He's part predator, don't you know? Swap out the dreadlocks for that ridiculous beard, and I don't know what's more absurd. Because never once do we see him trim that beard.
Never.
It drives me fucking crazy that it's that precise.
Or get the beard dye.
Oh, yeah. He should have got that when he went to the Continental.
Need some Just for Men, please, Sharon.
Yeah, just for Men. No, he wouldn't ask the bald guy.
Wick once again gets branded by the Ruscaroma crime syndicate.
They don't go, "Hey, why do you already have one?"
Yeah, right.
It's not buy one, get one free.
As he's asked who his second will be. And then this was odd. This shot of Winston walking through this fucking building. I'm like, will this ever end? We just have this.
It's the world's longest hallway.
We just have him walking down like it's the goddamn Shining Hotel. We see Winston talking to the Marquis about a warning at the cost of tyranny and how the old ways of management need to be changed. Winston says Wick is requesting the release of any and all terms he owes to the table and how the Marquis could be remembered for being the one who brought John Wick into the light, specifically his light. Winston also asks that his own excommunicado be lifted and he be given his hotel back. We see Wick sit down with the Harbinger, who gives the rules for the challenge. And God, I want these heavy-ass cards
is the world's, this is the most tense game of war you'll ever see. They really should sell these as props. I don't understand why they
do. I don't either.
Yeah, what's nice about this too is you don't, like if you're, I remember the first time watching this in the theater, I wasn't paying enough attention to know what it was. As I watched it in subsequent viewings, I'm like, oh, it's literally just high card. Mm-hmm. That's it. But I love the setup. Yeah, it's war. It's beautiful. This shot, again, like the other ones, are absolutely gorgeous.
The game goes on until they get dueling pistols, and the Marquis says that Wick is and will always be a killer, and it is killing that gives him purpose. And without that purpose, he is nothing. So we're building up a lot of stakes here.
Yeah, especially because if you lose, your second is also executed.
What I love about this, too, is it's not until now that John Wick learns that Winston put in something for himself. It's so when the Harbinger's like, and as well as the, you know, he'll Continental will be reconsecrated at the high table's cost. It's like Keanu looking back at him going, what the fuck?
Yeah, right.
It's like when agents put in stuff in the contracts.
Mm-hmm. Wick then tells Winston that he always has an angle, and Winston puts off what Wick was about to tell him until later. The Marquis tells Kane that if he kills Wick, him and his daughter will be free. We then see Wick and Kane have a talk, being surrounded by candles, and this gets about as deep as the series has gone. I love this conversation about how much Wick's wife meant to him and Kane's daughter means to him. This is all pretty good stuff and dimensions that we've never gotten before this.
No, but I think it's warranted for the way that this movie ends. Like, this is him literally at confession.
Oh, yeah. I was, by the way, I wasn't criticizing. I'm just saying it's stuff we haven't seen.
And look, Keanu's not a great actor with his dialogue readings, but I still think he's good at emoting, if that makes any sense.
I like this, and it fleshes out, even though they've hit on it a number of times already. These two are friends. They have a history. They care for each other. Neither one of them want to be pitted against one another, but they're going to do what they got to do. So I like this, and it's a nice... This movie feels like it is a jet taken off for 3 straight hours, but it's got some breaks in time, and when it does, it earns it.
Wick says it feels good to sit with a friend and that he will see him tomorrow. So with these conversations and the one between the Marquis and the Harbinger, we're really building this up.
We are. I mean, go ahead and start putting the crows, you know, have them start circling, because whether or not he's going to die, they're telling you that he is.
Let's not. Bill Skarsgård already did that, and it wasn't good.
And it didn't turn out very well.
But I also like that this is, like, for a franchise that is all about excess and the gun-fu, we are setting up for the most cliched ending of just dueling pistols at dawn.
Yeah.
Literally, the old traditions are still how this will end.
I'm going to go ahead and ask you guys. This thing is 2 hours 49 minutes. Do you feel this at all?
No. It is amazing how much I do not feel the time of this film. You know, I was a little harsh on last week's film. I feel like the times are kind of flipped. But this one, nope. Even watching it again at home on my couch. This is an hour and 50 minute, 3 hour movie.
I feel it just because I'm getting old, like, and, you know, I gotta adjust to my seat a little bit more than I used to. But outside of that, I'm not fatigued watching these movies, which is the biggest compliment. I think it's because of, like, scenes we just talked about where they know when to catch their breath and actually have some characterization, as basic and elementary as it is. It makes this feel not as laborious as something like the Raid movies, which those are also impeccably crafted, but you almost have to take a nap when they're done.
Yeah, I didn't like those. So says the guy who's 18 years the junior of the other two. Because I'm getting old, really, Matt?
Again, he's got 3 kids. I'll give him that.
Yes.
We see Wick at
how many times I actually sit down in a chair that has nothing in it? You know, my back is always pressing up against something that my chiropractor is going to love me in about 20 years.
We see Wick at the train station as the Bowery King welcomes him to the Resistance, saying he's now branching out and spreading his wings.
This is literally the freaking Matrix sequel.
Positively. He presents John with the new suit. After all, he needs to look his best, whether he's getting married or buried.
You want to say that this is the Matrix? It's the same subway. And it's the same. It is literally the same subway. Paris has this. They rerouted their system around it. They keep this one here for filming. So if you've seen a subway scene, it is almost almost guaranteed that it's filmed here at this spot, but you could tell the way that they do this, you could tell that it's almost set design just like it is from The Matrix.
All right, so this next set of scenes, you know, I would not have gotten this if not for about 3 years ago. I finally watched The Warriors for the first time. Never seen it in my life. If I did, I saw it as a young kid and didn't really remember it. But this whole DJ and this introduction to music and commentating on things that are happening, that's all The Warriors.
Oh, yeah, this literally turns into a Walter Hill movie.
Yeah.
With the energy of George Miller at the camera. Because, I mean, this, like, if this was a Mad Max movie, you wouldn't really bat much of an eyelash. But I also appreciate they use the French cover of Paint It Black.
Yeah, me too.
Which, it should be Paint the Town Red, because, oh my God, the body count in this is insane.
Ridiculous.
One, I laugh at that because Red Door Painted Black, Rouge, and at one point we do see the Moulin Rouge in the background here in Paris, and I love Painted Black. I hate Painted Black covers, but I love this cover of it. Yeah, I mean, you do everything except yell, come out and play. Mm-hmm. So I get it, but I think it's done stylistically enough that it works on its own. You know, this is a tribute without being a cover.
But it also helps that it's in another language.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I mean the scene and the DJ and all that in general.
Well, it's also kind of like you could read it as that call center from the other movies.
Yep.
Yeah.
She puts out a special request of putting a call out to send your favorite beats to the man in black, John Wick himself. She concludes with, remember, there's nowhere to run.
That might as well be a sex hotline for all we know.
So every one of these, we get the equip scene. This is the equip scene, right? This scene right here. Getting ready for battle. Wick asks for a gun, which the Bowery King abides. King then takes Wick to a ride to the church. Wick tells Winston that after today, it'll all be over as we hear long live the king yet again. Wick asks King for the ride, and Winston tells Wick to please not be late. After hearing what Charon had on his grave, Wick tells Winston that he wants loving husband on his. Wow, there's just setting this ending all up here. The DJ says that there is
I appreciate that they're not ignoring it, because it's inevitable. Mm-hmm. Like there was no other way this could end. And even with some shred of ambiguity that they try to add to, I mean, look, announcing a fifth movie on its own does that, but I'm glad that they're not trying to intentionally swerve you.
Mission Impossible.
God. The DJ says there is a sighting of the man in black and it's high time we paint him red. I like Wick actually avoiding these cars until he doesn't and then gets picked up for miles. Like, again, Wick with the cars. Doesn't end well for Wick. And more fighting ensues. I love this crashing a guy into a pole using a car door. That was a nice touch as Wick takes off and the DJ calls for them to mix it up. A car chase ensues as Wick shoots a guy through his windshield and circles around some cars. And he shoots at them as well. His car is taken down as the DJ calls for everyone to do a lot better. Wick then shoots and fights, and I like this hiding behind a toppled car as he shoots. This was a nice touch. Again, it's so hard to make all of these look interesting, because how many times can you have him do gun fu? But this scene works for me.
So everything here at the Arc de Triomphe, it's over the top. It's too much. Nobody can hit its target. These thugs shoot like fucking stormtroopers. And I guess the bounty only matters when it's convenient, because he rode on a fucking subway with other people. And with that all said, this is fucking amazing. Like, it's just, you never do a scene like this where there's actually traffic going on. So that they have traffic still going through is great. Because, God, what was it? The third or fourth Bond film that we discussed with, he's driving through Paris with no fucking cars. So I love that there's cars going on. At one point, a guy is, like, thrown up into the air after getting hit. John shoots him while the dude's flipping in the air.
Yeah.
it's over the top. It is way too much. And it is fucking glorious.
I mean, this thing is such an exercise in excess. It might as well have an aerobics VHS. But it's so glorious to watch. Like, this is... I feel watching these movies, the gratification that diehard gore hounds get from watching the Friday the 13th movies. Or horror films just designed to be murder porn. That's kind of what I get out of these.
Mr. Nobody gets involved as he calls Marquis and asks how much... As the way he sees it, if Wick makes it to the church on time, that would spell bad news for the Marquis. And I love this getting flipped into a car. This is good stuff. Guy gets attacked by the dog as Wick hops on a motorcycle and takes off. The DJ says which way Wick is headed. And once again, he is attacked from all angles. He makes his way through an old building as he gets in more fights. And the dog once again attacks.
Oh, this building.
Yeah.
This... What? not too, it was right before this, Malignant came out, and there was a very famous scene in that movie where it was a top-down view. So it's hard to not compare, but this fight's good, and then it goes to this top-down, and you just never seen something like this in a movie like this. And he's still ducking behind things, and he's still using cover, and fucking what the hell? Like, this is, they find a way to keep plussing themselves, and then they get the frickin' the burning shotgun out, and it's just, damn.
Meanwhile, the Marquis calls back and tells Mr. Nobody that he has a deal. He puts a jacket on as he's getting shot. The Marquis agrees to pay for the service as the DJ says the lottery just went up again. And I love this gun that Wick gets his hands on. These fire shotgun shells are just amazing. They just explode awesome. On impact. So we have this overhead shot of the action. And I will say, you know, while this is all really fun, guys, at this point, I'm exhausted. Like, there's been so much action. I'm feeling exhausted at this point.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I mean, shoot, it's tantric that way. You know, I get exhausted before the finish. They don't cut all of these action scenes could have been cut in half and it would still be fulfilling, but this film is not preoccupied with giving you too much. I mean, just keep, I guess you're going to, I'm going to fucking belly up to the buffet and keep going until I got to roll out because I'm exhausted, but I am not upset in any way.
Matt, are you exhausted at this point?
No, this is like eating two pizzas before sex. Like, it's just, you know, two things I love back to back. I mean, I also should say I like this movie even more having just watched The Final Reckoning and how mad I was.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can't say you didn't get enough action in this movie. Like, if that's your complaint, then you need to, like, I don't know, go jump off a cliff or something.
That's true. But we mentioned during Transformers, I mean, those exhausted us, but we were exhausted by the end and not having fun. I guess you're saying at this point you're having fun, right?
I'm also having fun, and I don't feel like I'm being insulted like I am watching Transformers movies.
So Mr. Nobody and Wick, they're hunting each other. They take themselves down a hole in the ground, and it's time to fight. They roll around a bit as Wick has him in a chokehold, and Mr. Nobody's dog attacks another thug. Dog barks, and Wick takes out the thug. He then runs and jumps out a window. Wick checks his watch, then gets up and continues to walk.
He jumps out a window, like four stories up. Okay, this is when I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
Like, I know we're super here. It Jesus. The way he hits the side of this van and crumples onto the ground.
This is why when I see Stahelski in interviews say it's all reality, it's just heightened reality, I call bullshit because there's no fucking way this could.
Oh, yeah, well, we've gotten more and more absurd with every movie that, but you know, I'm starting to feel detached from this being the real world, but I'm kind of okay with that because it's been a steady increase. Like, it's not like going from... I'm trying to think of a, like, Fast and Furious is the perfect example. You watch that first one, you buy it's the real world. Then you watch the sixth one and you're like, oh, there, everyone in the world was injected with rubber enzymes so they bounce off shit.
The DJ once again gets on the line and says, good luck. I know it's a tribute to the Warriors, but every time I see a DJ like this, I always think of The Fog. Like Adrian Barbeau going and getting on the line and just calling out requests. I don't know. It just made me feel that way. Wick walks up the steps right into Mr. Nobody again, and they once again go at it as yet more thugs attack. How about these Exorcist-style steps, Matt?
Oh, God. I mean, look, this movie has... like 100 times more broken necks than Jason Miller did in that first movie.
Yes.
It's like watching Million Dollar Baby. It's actually funny.
Wick is using the rails to dodge bullets. I like that. That was a nice touch.
I also love how he keeps getting knocked down the stairs.
Yeah. We cut to the Harbinger and Winston sitting and waiting as Wick is still going through this gauntlet, hiding behind trees and throwing his guns at people. He reaches the top, and then he just gets kicked all the way down again, as Matt mentioned. Just cartoonish rolls here as he's falling.
I've never seen a theater collectively let out a, oh.
The Harbinger says that it appears Wick won't be joining us as Wick looks up at some lights.
I like this part. If you notice, like, as they're going up, every now and then he'll reorientate himself by hitting his sword on the rails.
Mm-hmm.
And it little stuff like that, I don't think anybody would notice, but because Yen has done this before, it's just a great little character moment. And it just brings some reality to an obviously absurd character that I fucking love. Like, Donnie Yen shows back up and it just makes puts a smile on my face.
Kane gets the wick and tells him that he needs wick to get to the top of the stairs. He asks if he's ready, and they start their walk as they reload their guns and fight yet more attackers. Mr. Nobody sets his sights on Wick and shoots the guy next to him. Kane has a great line here. Yeah, but I can hit you, motherfucker. That was just fantastic. The dog protects Mr. Nobody as Kane and Wick establish that they're even now. They approach the Harbinger and Marquee as Mr. Nobody and his dog sit and watch. The Harbinger says, and so we begin, as everyone toasts to seeking the truth and enduring the consequences.
Great moment as they reach the top of these steps together and are thanking each other, because these two are going to face off. And Kane takes his sword and stabs John through the hand that he's got to shoot him with. It's such, like, I had missed it the three times previous that I had seen this film.
Jackets and shells are removed, and they take their guns provided by the Harbinger as he tells them to take position. And Kane tells Wick, I'll see you in the next life, brother. They take 30 paces, or do they? Like, I was counting. I didn't count 30, but maybe that's just my cynical
self. Is it 30 each? Is it 15 each?
Yeah, yeah.
They're fast and loose on steps.
That's what I was thinking. They load their guns, and Winston compliments the beautiful sunrise. Wick asks Winston for last words, and he replies, just have fun out there. Matt, you must be loving this, because you're the big Western fan here.
I appreciate the elegance of it, that they literally blew their load. I mean, you can't top an exploding shotgun with flamethrowers and cars. Like, they've used their whole bag of tricks, so we're going to go back to our roots and end this in the most, you know, it's fitting that John Wick would have, like, the most civilized final duel, because it's the, you know, it's subverting expectations in a good way.
They say they're ready, and then they fire. They get 20 paces closer, and they fire at one another yet again. This time they go 10 paces closer, and Wick says, those who cling to death live, and Kane responds, those who cling to life die. And when they fire this time, it is Wick who goes down in a heap. Mr. Nobody and his dog look sad as the Marquis claims victory and tells Kane him and his daughter are now free. The Marquis points the gun at Wick as Winston laughs and says he didn't shoot. Wick sits up and says consequences and shoots Marquis down as Mr. Nobody says that was some good shit. And I agree. That was awesome. That was a really nice way to take
this. I called this in the theater. I turned to my friend and said he didn't shoot yet.
You did. I did. I can guarantee that in the test screenings, enough people did not, that shot of Winston is a complete insert shot explaining that he did not take his own shot.
Well, okay, you called it, but at the same time, it's still an effective moment, isn't it?
Oh, it's awesome.
I'm not complaining. I said that. I'm like, oh, that's how he's going to win.
The Harbinger proclaims Wick free, as is Kane and his daughter. Winston is to be reinstated as full manager, and business there is now concluded. Kane kneels before Wick and says that Wick now owes him one, to which Wick says his key phrase, yeah. Wick stands and asks Winston if they'll take him home. Winston says, of course. Wick walks, takes off his belt, and sits. He once again imagines his former life with his wife as he falls on the steps. This I did not predict. There are these buzzards flying around Keanu Reeves this entire film, saying what he wants on his grave and whatnot. But here he has survived this final duel. I did not think they would kill him, but here he is falling on the steps, and I guess he's dead.
I see no way to get out of this. I genuinely don't.
The only thing I can see is we don't see a body. We see the grave. Yeah,
that's always the rule.
Yep.
No body, no confirmation. But I would feel cheated if they find some way, because, look, we know there's a fifth one. They've already announced it, so we don't have to speculate. Granted, they haven't, like, confirmed, oh, Keanu's in it. Or they also haven't said when it takes place. Mm-hmm. Maybe that chapter 5 is a bit of a misdirect. Maybe it's John Wick chapter 3.5. They have, like, a decimal removed. But look, in an era where so few franchises get good or significant send-offs, this and Logan, I finally felt satisfied. Like, it's very rare that I have these where I'm like, oh, I'm content. And this was the only out.
And yet they brought Logan back as well.
Yeah, but I was wrong about that. Mm. And they won me over.
Found it very fitting, and that the last thing he sees before he collapses is him and Helen together again. And as soon as I see that moment where you see Helen, I'm like, that's it. And it sure is. So I think if you cut that out, then you could have this more ambiguous. But I think showing that that's what he sees, this is an ending. It's going to change, I think, because I worry what John Wick 5 will be. But I do think this is how you end something like this, and you do it well. It is a Logan ending, and I'm sad to see him go, but I'm happy that they do something so good where most franchises can't.
You know what I really respect about this is the fact that we are four films in, and yet we haven't given him... He's had interactions with females in this series, but it's never been in a romantic way. His first shot is of him and his wife, and the last shot of him is of him and his wife. I respect the fact that they have done this in a way that respects his marriage and everything that he loved in his life revolved around his wife.
Yeah, they don't do the Bond thing of, oh, he gets married,
yep,
she gets killed, and you know he mourns for a bit and then goes back to fooling around. No, this was his one true...
Yep.
One true love. I hate to sound like romantic because that shit makes me want to puke, but you know,
they're, and it's what he left for.
Yeah.
I guess I'll say it's what I fear. I fear the sequel is going to be the impossible task and tying it back to Helen. And that is the one thing I don't want to fucking see.
We cut to Winston and the Bowery King over Wick's grave. As the king says, he never thought he'd see the day. He asks Winston if Wick is in heaven or hell, to which he responds with, who knows?
That, I think, is how the sequel's done. I think that is literally... a place, because they don't answer. I don't think it's literal heaven or hell afterlife. I think it's club heaven, club hell, or literally like family heaven hell type of place.
Winston puts his hand on the gravestone and says, farewell, my son, in Russian. He walks away with Wick's dog on a leash in his hand as credits roll on John Wick Chapter 4, boys. Wow. Much like the actual movie itself, which was 2 hours, 50 minutes, this podcast went by in a flash. On a scale of 1 to 10, what do we give John? Oh, go ahead.
You watched post-credit, right?
I did not.
Matt, you want to go?
Sure. So, you know how you said that Donnie Yen spinoff's not happening? Well, that's the end credit scene is Akira coming for him.
Well, that was 2 years ago. I still don't see it happening. We'll talk about that next week. Scale of 1 to 10. What do we give John Wick Chapter 4? Adam?
Well, I was extremely excited and ready to see this film. I was, you know, a little put off by 3. I enjoyed it, but I felt it was a step downward, and I was worried that this was going to be a downturn as well. And for the first 20 minutes of this film, I was really, really worried that this film was going to continue a downward trend. And then we get to Osaka, and this movie becomes an amazing tale of just beauty and violence and choreography and cinematography and sound and score. And I absolutely love what they do with this film. I think that the actors that they get, that they bring in, actors, actresses, do a really good job. I don't like the marquee, but I understand it. I think it confuses itself with its own lore that it's built, but I also think it tries to clean up some of the lore that got messy a little bit by the end of 3, at the beginning of this. So I appreciate that. I think that they worked to give John Wick an ending, and I think that they fulfilled that promise. I think that they did it in a fitting way. I think they did it in a way that rewards the audience, doesn't insult the audience. And this is one where if you've enjoyed any of the John Wick films to any point, I think you would go to this one and absolutely find yourself in love with it. There's not, I know some people thought I was going to bash this by the way I started, because yeah, the first 15 minutes are rough for me. After that, I love this. I don't have many bad things to say about it. I think it's an astounding piece of cinema. I wish I could see this in theaters again. I hope it gets a re-release maybe before the next one, because the theater experience, and as big, as loud as you could see it, is a fantastic way to do it. Not just Keanu, but cinematography, sound, set design, Foley work, editing, everything that went into this, unfortunately isn't recognized the way that it should from a statue standpoint, but god damn, it deserves a bunch of them. This is fantastic for me. I'm going to give it a 9. It's one of those where I saw this 3 times and I was glad that I did. It is the one of the quickest 3-hour movies that I could recommend to somebody. 9 on 10. I love John Wick 4.
Wow, after the way this started, I was not expecting that. Matt?
Likewise, I also saw this 3 times in the theater, which is my limit, but I spent 9 hours with Keanu Reeves, which if you told me that when 47 Ronin came out, I would have hung you up on a cross and left you to die, quite frankly. But like I said, this is a franchise where, unlike so many, they picked 4 movies to give it an ending, although they're seemingly going back on it. But until we know for certain what that is, I'll reserve judgment. But you know, 4 movies, granted, in totality, probably like 9 hours of content, but I got a full hero's journey, and I got my fill of action in this. I got my fill of, you know, I always want escalation, and I got that without feeling like I got ripped off or trying to have me sit through an ambiguous ending. I feel like you can read it if you are dead set on doing that, but I look at this as a, you know, he bled out and that's that. And that's what I wanted. And like I said, it's very rare when characters and franchises that I like have a strong ending that, look, I didn't cry watching this movie because it's not that type of context, but I felt incredibly fulfilled. And for a finale, Lord knows I recently haven't had many of those, especially over the last month, but holy shit, this is the, I think this is to me what Mad Max Fury Road was to so many people when that came out and everyone went apeshit over it. I mean, I love it, but I think this is the, you're asking me like, what's the best action movie of the last 20 years? Maybe recency bias, but I don't think it is. I would put this at the top. I purposely kept this off my top 10 Rolling Stone submissions because I didn't want to show my hand because of this podcast, but it replaces Casino Royale in that spot for my number 10, like for picking an action movie. Can't do much better than this, but I'll give it a 9. Very the strongest 9 I can possibly give.
Wow, so no 10, huh? I thought for sure
you'd ask me 10. Ask me in 5 years, it'll probably be a 10.
Well, when I first saw this, I would have given this a 10. I was really high on this when I saw it. Like I said, it was over, and me and Jim were talking about it all night. We had just watched it. And I was like, fuck, man, I wish I could have seen it in theaters. And I was head over heels over it. But I, for some reason, had not returned to it until we reviewed it for this show. And I see the flaws. To me, it's a tad too long. To me, even after talking about it, I still would cut Mr. Nobody out of this because he adds nothing. However, the dimensions they give this character make it a real glorious watch. As we talked about, the mythology gets kind of jumbled. I find there are a few too many side quests here. I find there are too many tumbles downstairs. But still, to give this character the finale that they did, even though we're going to get more, says a lot about how successful you can be if you make stuff up on the fly. Because I do feel like that's what they did with this. They cut the middleman out, which was the writer of the original, and they built their own mythology. And for the most part, it's very, very successful. But even given all that, I love Bill Skarsgård as the villain in this. I think the Marquis is one of the best villains we've had in this series, if not the best villain. And I love his end. It was very satisfying. And that's what I'll say about this movie is, in the end, it's a very, very satisfying movie. It's a very satisfying end to this character. It's a very satisfying end to this villain. But even given all that, I'm going to go the same score as last week. I'm going to give this an 8.5. After watching it for this, I don't feel like it's better than 3, but I still get a lot out of it. It's very adrenalizing, but it just felt a little too video gamey for me. And that, to me, it's not a compliment. But 8.5 out of 10 for John Wick 4, John Wick Chapter 4. All right, next week, we are going to conclude this series. For now, we're going to talk about Ballerina from the world of John Wick. And to me, boys, I think talking about the behind the scenes of this movie may be more interesting than talking about the plot itself. There are so many things to talk about. But what are you guys expecting when we talk about Ballerina next week?
I think it's going to be explosive. I know the movie's been underperforming to some people's thoughts, but I think it's going to be an explosive discussion.
We'll definitely be talking about a lot of explosions. Matt, what are you expecting when we talk about Ballerina?
Joan Woke. I don't know if I'm ready for this, boys. I really don't.
My hope for this, when we started it, after Matt scheduled it for right after Mission Impossible, was it to be a more satisfying ending than Mission Impossible. I'm not sure we'll get that, but who knows? I like Ana de Armas. I thought she was a good Bond girl for how little she was used, and I think she could work. So we'll see. This is not the first time she square off against Keanu Reeves. We'll talk about that next week, but I do have hopes. Right. I do have hopes that it'll at least be enjoyable. But until next week, when we talk about Ballerina and talk about what we're going to talk about next, our next series, Podcast Talk, Cowards Are Silent, But Wise Men Listen. Thank you, boys.
So, you want to kill him? You want to kill him? I want to kill him.
What about you, Mr. Vic?
I'm going to kill you.
Oh, for better, of course, yeah. But it looks like we have ourselves a genuine conundrum.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Just have fun, Albert.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice. Wow.
What have you done? Finished it.
Check out the Percolated Media Archives, as we have tons of franchise reviews, including the Planet of the Apes franchise, Star Wars,
the ongoing Marvel series, Lethal Weapon series, the Alien franchise,
the Mad Max movies, Avatar,
Mission Impossible film series,
Jurassic Park, and so many more.
A man can stay here a long time and never eat the same meal twice.
Good day to you both.
3 Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
Well, sometimes you gotta cut a motherfucker.
The 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
I have enjoyed his company.
The 3 Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Consider this a professional courtesy.
Scheduling done by Matt.
He's coming again.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Jonathan, just walk away.
Yeah, Jonathan, walk away.
The 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
John Wick is a man of focus.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2025, and any and all sound and audio clips are used for entertainment purposes only.
He's excommunicado.
Unless you wish to become the same, I suggest you lower your guard.
We gotta go.
Ah!
Now.
What a wonderful actor. Scorpion, for those that were unfortunately saw the last remake of Mortal Kombat. But you know where he goes back with Keanu, right?
Keanu's not in Mortal Kombat.
No, no, no.
No, he's asking where he goes back to. No.
Yeah, 47 Ronin.
Jeez. Oh, God, that's right.
Yep.
I like that there's thought into him actually fighting, and of course you get a guy who is as believable as Keanu. Honestly, the lineup in this movie makes me mad at like how they phoned in those Expendables sequels.
To be discussed another day. We see tumbling down in
30 fucking years from now when they're all dead.
We see.
Well, they're treating him like a Bond villain. He doesn't do the dirty work.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is funny because right after this, I saw Boy Kills World where he's like jacked beyond belief.
Who's that?
Bill Skarsgård.
Oh, Skarsgård. Really?
Oh, yeah. Look up how he looked for The Crow.
Yeah.
Like, he got himself into really good shape, and unfortunately, the movie wasn't worth it.
The Marquee. She says Wick will only be welcomed into their family if he kills the man who killed her father.
Yeah, and that's his actual sister?
Yeah. Yeah, what is going on here?
Well, is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought she looked familiar. I've seen her in, I think, on in like red carpets with him.
Well, she's also in Harry Potter.
Oh, fuck, that's it.
She sends Klaus to help Wick.
And every now and then, if you notice with Donnie Yen, with Kane, like he shows up halfway through. Never mind. My bad.
All right, we'll hold it.